Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and my illustrious co-hosts are Tom and Melissa Gould. Hello,
Hi,
guys.
Hello.
How are you?
Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. I know you guys are busy helping prepare for the upcoming retreat next weekend.
Yeah, next week.
Coming quick.
They just keep coming up, don't they?
Yes, they do.
We'll be ready.
Okay. As our listeners know, our regular listeners anyways, this is a show where we field your questions and take your calls about anything to do with the afterlife. If you had a question, if you want to share an experience, the number here is 888-627-6008. And we can get right into some of the questions and comments that people wrote in. You know, first, there's always some people that like to share their situation and experiences that they had. So here's one that came in. She's writing stage 4 metastatic adenocarcinoma that has traveled throughout my body. And a few days ago, I was in so much pain from the cough, from the cancer in my lungs, that my son took me to the hospital. And while I was waiting to have a CT scan done, my phone kept beeping with messages one right after another. So I looked at my phone, and all of the messages were from my niece, who was getting messages from my deceased daughter. She wrote, "Jesse said, stop and listen, that she is right by you right now and kneeling against you, saying, stop and listen." I told my niece, "Stop and listen to what?" And she said she didn't know, but what she did know was she was with me, kneeling next to me. Then I told her, "Wow, I really could use her with me right now because I'm in the hospital, urgent care, having CT scans done because my cancer is spreading fast." It brought comfort to me to know that my daughter, who has been deceased for over 20 years, forced her way to get to me and let me know that she is here with me and that I am not alone through all of this.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so, you know, I did respond in, you know, email to this person. And as we both know, I mean, we're not surprised by this, right? I mean, you know, when you really need your loved one to be with you, especially near end of life, it's so commonplace for loved ones to not only stay with you, but when your time should come, to be an escort, you know, for you to the other side. So
it's a comfort, I think, to know.
Yeah, and obviously this was very comforting, and you know, the same person, I won't mention, you know, names, of course, wrote back again and said that another account, you know, when my daughter was killed by a drunk driver 2 weeks before her 18th birthday and her graduation from high school, the day before her birthday, I was making a large collage sign of all her birthday pictures. And when I finished, I left it standing up in my living room and I went to sleep. Around 4 a.m., the time she was killed, I heard "Mom," and I felt a nudge. So I got out of bed and was walking through the house. As I looked at the sign I had made, I saw her looking at it. I whispered her name and she looked at me and said, "Mom, this was my favorite birthday. Come here and look at us at this in this picture. I asked her, "Do you like this?" She replied, "Yes, Mom." And then she looked me dead in my eyes and said, "Mom, you know I love you, right?" I said, "Yes, Jessica, yes, I do." And then, "Mom, never forget how much I love you, okay?" And then she repeated again, more seriously, "Mom, never forget how much I love you." And then she said, "I have to leave," and was gone. So I do believe when you say they are always with us, you know, so personal account. I mean, she knows, you know, daughter is always with you. But how wonderful to get such clear, you know, communication from the
it's
daughter.
Wonderful. You know, and it made me think when she said, you know, "I have to go," but we always get questioned about what are they doing on the other side. And so, you know, so maybe our loved ones are busy with who knows what, overseeing other people, you know, learning things that they needed to learn in the existence they're in right now. But they can still reach us, no matter how busy they are. They can still reach us when we need them most.
Yeah, there's a related question that somebody, you know, wrote in and said, you know, what advice would you give to someone who's sitting with a dying loved one? How about, what would you say to that?
I mean, if they're sitting with a dying loved one, first of all, I think I would make a point to let them know how much they meant to me and point out the things that that have happened in the lives that have personally affected me from their actions or the way they carried themselves, and then just talk about all the wonderful memories. However, having just said that about the memories, maybe I would skip that because I recall hearing, and this might be something our listeners might want to chime in on. I heard that when our loved ones are near death and we want to play music for them and our inclination is to play their favorite songs, as we sang to Tom's mom, Christmas songs, that actually when it is, we know it's their time to go. And I think I heard this in nursing home situations where the elderly are near the end, to play unfamiliar songs because the familiar songs are going to make them want to stay on this earth and it's their time to go. So it makes their crossing over lengthier than it needs to be, at least if there's suffering involved, whereas different, unusual, unfamiliar music carries them over in a gentler way. And that makes me think of the shamanic breathwork music that we've heard played. Some of us have experienced that. And it's quite unusual. And it's unusual music that when you're in the meditative state, takes you to somewhere else. So I've just gone along from here. What do you do with your loved ones who are near death to that, but I guess that's how my brain works. So I don't know if I answered any questions.
Yeah, you know, when I had heard that question, I of course thought of my own experience, and of course both of my parents who I was with near their dying experience, both were unconscious. And so my first advice is if you're loved one, if you're with them and they are dying and they're in a coma or cannot speak, talk to them anyway, because they are hearing you. And in fact, with my father, he had had a massive stroke and you know, was in what they would call a vegetative state. And the doctors said, well, you know, he can't hear you, but you know that. And I know he heard me. And the things that my advice is, if you know your loved one is dying, what I did for my dad was I told him it's okay to go. I said, you know, my mom was still alive at the time. I said, I'll take care of mom. You know, everything's fine from that end. You've done what you need to do, and you know, I told him it's smooth sailing from here on in. He was a sailor, and I felt I got a reaction to some of that I said. So yeah, so talk to them as if you always would, because they are hearing you. Let them know that it's okay to go to the other side, and that you'll see them again. And I guess that's my major advice.
And leave no words unsaid, because you don't want to have any regrets.
Yeah, I'm from talking to death doulas over the years and hospice people. I know the advice that they always gave me was the most important thing is just be there and listen. It's not yet. You don't have to feel obligated to talk or, you know,
that's
just
true.
Listen to them. And, you know, I would add, I wouldn't necessarily bring it up, but if they start talking about what comes next, join in, and tell them what we know comes next, right? And most importantly, be aware of things that are happening, certain experiences, right? I mean, our listenership knows about things that can happen, you know, at the end of life, but not. So if you know about all the stuff that we're talking about, and look for it and embrace it if it happens.
Yeah, not necessarily right before they die, but my mom had gotten a diagnosis with leukemia and only had weeks to live. And during that period, you know, she naturally got a little down. But I spoke to her and I said, yeah, but you're going to see my dad again. You're going to be together. He's planning a big party and that sort of thing. Let them know that they're on their way to something way more beautiful than they've ever imagined here. And my mom took that and she looked up and said, you know, I feel kind of guilty, but I'm kind of looking forward to it. So, you know, that's anything you can do to make it easier. And again, that it's tough for us, but for them, they're about to embark on a wonderful adventure.
Right. I was doing an about face with some questions on mediums. This one says, do mediums ever get nervous before doing readings? Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know so much that they get nervous before doing like private readings, but we've certainly noticed that a lot of them do get nervous in doing a group, you know, especially if it's a larger group. And we also know from personal experience when we evaluate, you know, the mediums for the certification program under the controlled settings, boy, a lot of them really get nervous and understand. That's a little bit different because it's a clinical atmosphere, and I understand that. But the three of us have seen mediums. The more accomplished professional mediums, you know, that we work with, very rarely do we notice them getting nervous. But some that are maybe not as developed or haven't done groups before, I've noticed that you know they get nervous. Why not? I mean, they're like everybody else. And if you're going to give a presentation for work or anything, and you're putting in going before people, I think it's a natural reaction. We forget sometimes that mediums are human too, right? So
as you say, in a group setting, when they go into a group, they know that they're not going to get to everybody. So that's a cause to be nervous, that you're going to disappoint half of the audience. That would make me a little nervous if I were doing that sort of things. But I don't think that any of them really get nervous about their abilities. They know what they can do and they know that it works. So they're confident that going into it, but like I just said, they may be more nervous about the sheer amount of people rather than how they're going to perform.
Right. Here's one. People are always posting photos of things like bushes or clouds and claim to see things in them. When I look at most of them, I don't see what they're talking about. Are any of these things real? Again, it's yes and no. I mean, I'm very much aware of pareidolia, which is our tendency to make sense out of things that are
Say that word again, Bob.
pareidolia. So
Not
that's the ability, that's the sense of seeing things when they things that may appear to be random and chaotic, but you spot something, and so you're looking at a cloud and you swear that you're looking at Abraham Lincoln, right? But then if you go turn to your friend and say, what do you see there? And they say nothing, I don't know the medical reason for it, but our brains are kind of hardwired to try to make sense out of things that appear to be disparate and not coherent, and we see things in them to form. We want it to form a pattern, make it meaningful. So, on the other hand, sometimes we see these photos and of something that, and I could bring 20 people in the room and say, "What do you see in that photo?" And all 20 will say, "Oh, that's, that's something different, right?" Because that kind of goes against the argument that we're just trying to make sense out of nonsense, because everybody's brain couldn't work exactly the same way, right? So 20 different people are seeing or hearing the same thing, then I would say, well, maybe there's something to it. But I think that sometimes we have a tendency to take it too seriously, like not everything is a sign from the creator or from the universe, right?
And I think when folks, I think we've all been shown those photographs of someone who's taken on the image of a deceased loved one. When people have those, they're very excited about them and they want to share them with others. I can't remember, there must be a word for that, where the person, like just in a restaurant, hasn't really turned into your loved one, but that's how you've perceive them in that moment, as if they've put their image on them, not permanently, but in that moment. So when you're with when one it gets excited about these experiences, I'd almost say keep it to yourself, because others are likely to burst your bubble a little bit, and you're excited. Take it for that. It made you feel a certain way, like signs. Not, your sign might not have a big impact on somebody else. So treasure it for yourself and what it means to you.
And also, our conscious mind has filters built into it. So, whereas somebody's saying, "Oh, I see an image in the clouds," your conscious mind is, "Yeah, you don't see anything," and that colors your perception. And an example of that is you've seen these things called the magic eye. It's a page, and it's in colors and that sort of thing. And within the colors, there's a word or an image or something. And when you look at it, you don't see anything. And it's a matter of turning off and basically blurring your own vision so that your mind kind of shuts down, and subconsciously then you see, oh, there it is, and it comes to life in front of you. So that's at play as well.
Those magic eyes. I did. Our children would bring them home from the Scholastic book fairs, and usually you'd say, "I can't do this. I can't see it." But I did learn how to do it. I don't know if I still have that ability, but I was able to do it. And for me, it was putting the picture right up to my nose and then gradually moving it away, but not refocusing my eyes. And that's when I saw it. And that made me wonder, is that how people see auras around others? Because I've tried. I haven't tried this method that I just shared, But I'm wondering if that might work. Now you're going to not go nose to nose with somebody and slowly back away, but maybe just set your gaze on them and then let your eyes relax and unfocus. And maybe that's when one can see auras. Have you ever seen auras, Bob, around individuals?
I never have, but listening to you, I mean, it reminds me of like the principle involved in a psychomanting, right? Because the way you described it, I mean, you're gazing into a mirror, right? And you're not really thinking about anything, and then you're sort of relaxing, and then these images or whatever we're experiencing, comes to life. So maybe that's something similar. I'm kind of thinking that like holding the paper close and then moving it back has more to do with your vision than anything else. But relaxing and gazing, I think there's something to that, right?
I think I've always been overexcited when we experimented with the psychomantium. You know, I think we were all just like ready to see amazing things and got a little too anxious. But I know you had individuals sit in yours for quite a while.
I mean, some people had some quite extraordinary experiences, but like everything else, I didn't really devote the time to it. So, I don't know about you guys, because I know you had built one as well, but
Yeah,
I
sure.
didn't.
Try it once.
And what you say, Melissa, is true, not only in this, but in so many things that we have so many expectations and hopes and expectations that, especially when it comes to communicating with our loved ones, right? That we want things and we want it to happen now, and we don't have the patience, to wait. And that's certainly understandable because, we miss them so much, but.
You know, in our world of our speaking of the three of us, our world of belief, I'll share with you an interesting thing that happened to me a week ago, and I don't still know quite what to make of it, but in our home, Tom and I have a bedroom at one end of the hallway and the bathroom's at the other end, and inevitably one of us gets up to use the bathroom in the night. And it was, the wee hours of the morning. It was actually Christmas Day night. We'd been in New Jersey during the daytime and we'd driven home and gone to bed. So actually, it was in the wee hours of the day after Christmas. But I'm in the bathroom, sitting there, not staying in there long. But all of a sudden, I hear Tom's voice in the hall. Hello. And, very politely, the door is not locked, it's just closed. And as I always do, I go, I'm in here. I'll be out in a moment. And we don't have many, we have low lights or no lights on at night, but you can have your night vision. So I stepped into the hallway and just, made sure I wasn't going to bump into him. But I figured he'd walk the other way just while he waited for me. And I went back down the hallway into bed. He was in bed, sound asleep. So I do not know who that loud, deep hello was from. And the next day,
It
that's
was me, Melissa. I just couldn't wait any longer to get ahead of you.
I'm so
Well,
relieved, Bob. I've been driving myself crazy.
that's a strange occurrence, right? So what was your sense of it? What?
Well, so, unfortunately, I have a brother who's kind of removed himself from the family, and I sent him off some Christmas goodies, and I don't typically hear from him, but I thought, gee, I haven't heard from him. When was the last time I heard from him? So I started calling his number the next day, which I know he doesn't want to hear from me, but the phone rang and rang and rang, and I just started to really get a little. I had a sick feeling in my stomach, actually. Tom knows I was feeling incredibly unsettled. And for anyone out
The voice made you think of that, of your
there,
brother?
because after so I should have said this. So I wrote this all down. So the prior week in my dream, my mom suddenly appeared. In my dream, it was a, and I haven't recall any dreams since mom passed at the end of 2019. But in my dream, suddenly there was my mom looking. She was standing tall. She had sort of shrunken and got hunched over in her later years. Beautiful smile on her face, slender. I could describe what she was wearing. And it was like, I know this person. I go, Mom. And we have a big hug. And it's wonderful. And then coming up behind her that I can see are two male figures wearing hooded robes. And one of them greeted her with a hug. So I didn't know what to make of that. And that was the extent of the whole dream. I shared it with my sister and her family. And I started to attribute it to maybe being my nephew, who's alive, but just to think of a family member that could have resembled the hooded figure. But then that next night, when I had this hello and started to think about my brother, I thought, wow, that hooded figure definitely could have been him. And what does that mean? So I have not yet spoken to my brother, but being the good detective that I am, where I went for my information? You'll never
Where?
guess. The post office.
Really?
Because I had to go to a local post office first to ask them for a direct phone number to the post offices in his area. And the postal worker here was very kind to do a little research and came back with some phone numbers. And I got lucky with a postal worker. I'll say the state, it was in Vermont, very friendly. And we had a conversation, and he finally offered to go check on my brother. And
Wow.
he did. He said, wait, it was a Friday by now. He was, I guess, looking at the clock, goes, that's not too far away. I'll go drive there and take a look, and I'll come back and tell you. So he did. And
Wow.
according to him, he saw my brother. And my brother got my package. Now I'm starting to think, did he just tell me that to make me feel okay? So I really don't know, but I still can't understand who was the hello. Hello. That was all it was. Hello.
Well, maybe you'll figure it out
I know.
as time
Anyway.
goes. Well, and there's a related question to that.
Go
It
ahead.
said, should I take all dreams literally? In other words, if I have a dream in which my loved one appears, and in the dream I see my loved one doing something that makes me uncomfortable, what should I make of that? I would say that you can't take all dreams literally because most dreams are just subconscious
Putting
stuff,
random, yeah.
kicking around. So, I mean, I'll give you an example. I have many, many dreams in which my deceased wife appears. It's and I don't and they're not dream visits. She's just I'm dreaming of something else, and like she pops in. But I would say in 90% of these dreams, and I've had a lot of them, we're divorced, and we're not living together, or she left me, or and it makes me sad, and it makes me uncomfortable. But the way I rationalize that is just that's just my own stuff, like dealing with her not being here, like in other words, she's not really dead, maybe I'm making that up, like we're divorced or separated, but it's still uncomfortable. So I think it would be a mistake for me to say, well, this is my wife visiting me and she's showing me that, that we're apart, because that wouldn't make any sense. Because I've also had a couple, not a lot, of what I would say dream visitations, and they're very loving, So I just use that as an example. Like, don't, there's so many people that come up to us. You see it even at the retreats. I had a dream, my loved one, and like they're mad at me.
Well, that's just, they're not really mad at you. That's just your stuff. You may have had an argument, you're guilty about it or something, So you agree with all that?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. And again, these dream things, sometimes it's just and not perhaps in the scenario you described, Bob, but all sorts of weird things, and it's just little mishmashes of what's happened in your day that now at night when you're relaxed and asleep, your brain's making it into a story of some sort that has, no sense to it. So I agree, though it's unsettling, isn't it? You don't want to you're
Yeah,
gonna wake up.
it is unsettling. It's not
Yeah.
a but it's not a pleasant thing,
No,
but
no.
I can step back from it, and then just realize that this is just my own imagination, I
Yeah.
guess.
And what does your therapist say?
I don't. I should go to a therapist. My therapist would have a field day. They'd write a book about
Henry's your
me.
therapist.
Here's a question. Can those in the afterlife see our future? If they can, why don't they warn us about bad things to come?
Oh, we know some stuff about that.
Yeah, I'd have to say yes, because time is not linear on the other side. But I also know that whatever's coming, if it's bad, it's meant for us. And it's put in our pathway for us to react, adapt to it, and learn from it. And so, yeah, I'd say that's why they're not warning you. No matter, I guess the bottom line is there's nothing that happens on this plane, in the physical plane, that really amounts to a hill of beans in the long run. So, whereas we're in the midst of it going, oh my gosh, my arm was chopped off. Why didn't they warn me about that? Well, that's. You were meant to have that happen. And everything is temporary. In 40 years, you'll be on the other side anyway.
Right.
And maybe I should pick a bigger number, 100 years. So I think that's the ultimate thing, that we are supposed to experience all the experiences that come our way.
I agree, but and yet we hear countless accounts of people who hear a voice in their head that say turn left when they really were going to turn right, and they avoid an accident. Right. Or,
Yeah.
so I don't know how to equate the two, because I agree with a lot of what you said there, so I don't know how sometimes they intervene and sometimes they can't, or maybe sometimes they try, but it's not easy, to get through, so maybe more people try to warn us of something. But I also agree with a lot of what Tom said, is that it also could be part of a plan, and that spirit in general just lets free will determine what's going to happen on this blip of a physical plane, and
Yeah.
so it's a tough question. I mean, it's a big question that people ask in a broader sense. Why do those in the afterlife, why don't they do things that will help stop war, and or cure disease or whatever? And maybe they don't, they'll interact once we escape this physical plane, but they're not going to interact with us, on this physical plane, because we make our own bed and our decisions, with our own free will.
Yeah, I ultimately hang my hat on the experiential that we're here. I mean, we're in a pressure cooker. This life on Earth for 100 years is things are going to happen to us. And then at the end of that 100 years, we're going to go back to the pure energy of the universe and live for eternity. So I wouldn't get too bent about, oh, why can't they change this environment that we're in? Because that's the environment we chose. We came to this environment for all of those reasons, and probably full knowing that we were going to be in a situation where things aren't fair, people are cruel, there's evil going or evil deeds being done, all of that sort of thing. It's part of it. It's part of the growth process for your soul. And as unpleasant as it might be, the rewards at the other end of it are immense.
Here's something I was thinking about at 3 o'clock this morning. This was not a question. This is just my, so I'm thinking, let's say that the Earth ends, which could be from a nuclear disaster or natural disaster, but the human population goes extinct. An asteroid hits us and we're obliterated, right? Does that end reincarnation? I mean, there's nobody left on Earth. So, I mean, all the reports and the research I read on reincarnation, and most people say that they reincarnate only to an earthly
Like beings.
earth beings. And there's no more earth beings. There's nothing to reincarnate
Yeah.
That's a sick one. I know, but I'm trying to ra rash. I try to rationalize all these things. I can't figure that one out.
Well,
That's
at first you said that, well, the earth ending, or all of a sudden there's total annihilation. To me, what strikes in my mind is that the powers that be on the other side that have this earth for its classroom are basically saying, yeah, that didn't work. Let's try. So yeah, everybody, all the energy would be absorbed into the universe. And they'd find another classroom. They'd find another planet and other beings which you can inhabit. I know what you were saying, that if you were born a human and you die, you're going to come back as a human. There's a lot of research on that, a lot of data on that, that that is true. However, I have heard and read that you don't necessarily have to come back as a human. I mean, you can reincarnate as a tree or as a dog or a squirrel, and that's just finding another living being to inhabit. So I think if humankind was done away with, there'd be other beings for us to inhabit.
Do you want to touch upon something you mentioned to me about reincarnating into a
Yeah,
fully?
that's something that I read in this. I'm reading this massive book about of essays written to supposedly prove that there's an afterlife. And this the first essay I read was 100 pages long, and it was very scientific and meticulously done. And there were a couple of things that got mentioned that I had never heard before. And they go into talking about our friend Dr. Jim Tucker, who did extensive research in reincarnation. And one of the things they said, there are thousands and thousands of cases of little children who come out and start talking about their other family, and they've even been able to track down the other family, and what the child was saying was true. And so that was our general idea of reincarnation. But then there was this one a couple of paragraphs that there are very few documented cases, but there are a few dozen documented cases of someone reincarnating into an adult. so that they come, but the spirit comes back to earth and into a body that's already grown with its own personality and basically takes over the personality. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I have. And then you get into possession cases, right? Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it's not common, but it does. There's a lot of case literature on that, and that can be somewhat disheartening or frightening, even, right? Because you're, as you say, Tommy, you're already an adult with your own personality, and all of a sudden, you've got all sorts of things going on, so it's easy to be misdiagnosed and immediately put on antipsychotic drugs,
Exactly.
because of it. So.
I mean, one story that was fascinating, that this little girl who was cognitively disabled, and they were going to put her away. This is earlier than the last century. They were going to put her away in an asylum, and that was going to be her life. And the family was very upset about that, and they spoke with a woman who had lost her daughter earlier on, and through a medium, the medium said, "Can we let the deceased daughter come into your daughter's body to help out?" And they all agreed, and the medium was able to contact the other spirit. And sure enough, the spirit went into the other little girl, and the girl was able to lead
Cool.
a normal life. I'm just throwing that out there, that there is an awful lot that's going on that we still don't know anything about.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Sounds like a
Okay.
Stephen King novel.
Yeah. What I also always found fascinating in reading about those reincarnation cases is how people choose their mother, their new mother, where
Yeah.
they, they select, I'm you, when they reincarnate, into the woman gets pregnant, and their soul gets put into this new mom's body that that they selected. I mean, it's hard for us to wrap our heads around these things, but and yet there's shown in case after case that these things are possible.
Now, there's one other thing that came up in that essay that was new to me, and I'd like to get your take on it, because you've talked a lot about EVP, electric voice phenomena, where you turn, not that you can do that with today's TVs, but if you have an old radio, turn it to a non-broadcast station, and you'll get the fuzz, the white noises they. And if you record that white noise, spirit can imprint their voices on it a lot of the time. Well, in this discussion about EVPs, they also said that there was a scientist who would turn the TV to the white noise and then able to actually converse back and forth, not recording, just sort of after a while, just asking questions and getting answers through the white noise. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I mean, Bocci in Italy, I forget, his first name, but he used to have these old transistor, radios, like from the when radios first came out, with all the tubes and everything.
Yeah.
And he used to invite, it was mostly parents, who had lost children into these sessions. And through like what you described, that this static or this white noise, the voices would appear and it would be interactive, and the parents could ask questions and they would answer back. But the thing that's fascinating is that one time the radio, I don't know the names of the radio tubes, but one of the radio tubes like broke and burnt out. So he pulled out the tube to effectively make it a non-working apparatus. And the voices still came through,
Yeah.
and that's
That's pretty
Cool.
good.
So it just shows you that if they want to get through, they're going to find a way to get through, somehow. But
Wow.
yeah, I mean, it really is. And he was quite famous. People used to come from all over the place just to have these conversations, as you describe.
Isn't anyone else doing that work now?
Not the way he was doing it. I mean, he passed away not that long ago, but
Gee, but if
yeah.
someone could have done it, others.
Yeah. Well, but it also raises the question, especially considering how easy it was for him to get it, and it got even without the tube, is that maybe he himself had mediumistic abilities and was somehow attracting. We talk about that also with EVP, that people, the people that get all these EVPs on a regular basis are really acting as mediums. They're bringing through, spirit. The conduit is not the medium themselves, but it's the recording device. But it's really they that are attracting, the spirit. So
True.
I believe that some people, the reason why some people get them like crazy and other people never get them, is that the people have abilities. It's not just the recorder; it's the experimenter, that's involved in the process.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
makes
that
sense.
conscious mind filtering again, that if you can remove your filters, you can be open to that. And I know that many of our mediums will be the first to tell you don't need a medium, you can do this yourself. And
Right.
we all go, yeah, sure. And as soon as we go, yeah, I don't believe it, then it won't happen.
Yeah.
It's the old expression, you can believe you're going to succeed, or you can believe you're going to be fail or fail, and you're right either way.
Right.
Do you believe you can or
Here
believe you can't? Be right.
was a question. Does mediumistic ability lessen as the medium ages? For instance, when the medium is 80, is their ability the same as when they were 30?
Question.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know a lot of mediums in their 80s or 90s for that matter. However, it's probably a lot of factors. I mean, one, the mediums tell us that they burn out. They tend to burn out because it takes a physical toll. I mean, just think about it. They're always feeling what the deceased felt and all that stuff. So I think that the mediums no longer wish to partake in, mediumship when they reach a certain point. They've had enough. So they also don't want to work as hard, right? And we've also, and you've seen this as well, seen some mediums, not necessarily involved in age, but sometimes spirit starts to pull back when they are no longer interested in working with them for various reasons. That may factor into it too. But it made me think though. I mean, we really don't, we haven't seen any mediums that are elderly. Have you?
No, and I know that some have passed on.
Of course, from where I'm sitting, nobody's elderly.
Yeah, I'm elderly.
But some that have passed on, they even, they were, I'm sure, our age or younger. So yeah, you're right. I mean, to me, elderly is anyone older than me.
I know. Well, I get it. I'm joking that I'm elderly, but every time I go to visit my father
Oh,
in the independent living, the women there start hitting on me because they think I'm fresh meat. I'm a new resident.
Oh, wow.
And I go to a restaurant with my father, and they think we're brothers. So it's like I'm lost. I'm done.
Which way is it gonna go? Oh, that's cute, though. Do they have any creative pickup lines for you?
No.
I have to break in only
Yeah.
because Bob, you're probably the sexiest man alive.
Yeah,
But it's
problem,
true.
Don, is it's only to 90-year-olds.
No, but it's true. It's true. I mean, I don't think you could ever age out of your sexiness. And I mean that. You're hot. You're fantastic, and I mean that.
You want to get married now?
No. Unfortunately, I am a hetero. But I will say this. You are the sexiest man alive. You really are.
You're making me blush.
I love you. I love you. And I got to tell you, to the Gould family, I love you both so much.
Oh, you're so sweet.
No, I mean that. Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you. Your friends, your loved ones, your family. I wish you so much love, because that's all you deserve.
That's true. And the same for you. I hope you feel the love right back.
I do. And thank you. And forgive me for interrupting, Bob, but hey, you're the sexiest man alive.
Had to be said.
That's right.
Oh, thanks so much, Don.
So, Bob, we have to resurrect now the Signs of Life magazine so you can be on the cover.
Yeah. Well, we'll sell those. Let's see. I know we
lost your place.
We don't have a lot of time, but here's one. My husband did not believe in the afterlife. Would that have been a problem when he died?
No.
Now he knows.
Right. My father was exactly the same way. You know, you didn't want to bring up this stuff around him. You know, he wouldn't have it. And yet after he passed, he's been the best communicator I've ever experienced in that. Right. So he knows that there's an afterlife now that he's there.
Yeah. Well, like Melissa said it right away. I mean, so he doesn't believe in my afterlife, but he died and then he woke up. So immediately he did. So that ship sailed. Yeah. Well, the follow-up question to that is, do people who believe in an afterlife have an easier time when they cross over than those who don't believe in an afterlife?
You know, you can only hope so, because who knows what our physical human brain it goes through. I mean, I sure hope so.
I'm sorry to.
No, that's okay.
I'm thinking that in answer to the question, life leading up to death is easier if you believe. However, I do believe that the actual crossing, because I have gotten many messages that I've seen come back for people like in a car crash or most notably our young friend who died in a fire. I mean, how horrible could that be? And his mother for years was like, oh my God, how horrible, horrible, horrible to die in a fire. And the reports back is once you're there to the point where you're going to die, there is no pain, that you then get greeted and escorted over to the other side. In fact, that's our friend Dave Kane has a great story about his wife trying to deal with her son who was burned and just feeling horrible that he was burning to death. And they got messages from a medium, from a license plate that just said no pain. So I think crossing over is an easy process. And in fact, it's for the people who do, they experience the greatest joy of their life. You take the accounts from the near-death experiences, they all come back from a near-death experience saying, my God, I experienced a feeling of love like I had no idea ever existed. And the colors and the beauty, it was just so wonderful that I didn't want to come back, but I had to come back to this. So I think it's a shame to have a fear of death.
Yeah.
Right. All right. I think that We're kind of out of time. Let's read Claude's Global Peace Prayer. Let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
Oh, and I'd like to say that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Good night.
Good night.